Welcome back to a Clubfoot Mom podcast. I am your host and fellow Clubfoot Mom, Maureen Hoff. Today's guest is Bill Palmer, executive and leadership coach, pro bono coach for Global Clubfoot Initiative, and recent founder of the Clubfoot Fund. Having personal experience living with Clubfoot, Bill talks about what led him to become involved with GCI and why he decided to start the Clubfoot Fund. Bill and I have been wanting to record this episode for a while now, and I'm excited we are able to make it happen and for all of you to hear his story and about the important work he is doing in the global Clubfoot community. Let's jump in. Welcome to the podcast, Bill. I'm so happy to have you here today just to talk about your personal experience and walk with Clubfoot and then your work with the Global Clubfoot Initiative and your most recent venture. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
No, happy to be here, Maureen. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm excited. I know this has been a long time in the works that we've been trying to make this happen. So I'm happy we're finally at the finish line here and people get to connect with you. I love following all of your work on, especially on Instagram or on LinkedIn. I'm always keeping track of what you're saying and kind of the work that you're doing. So I'm so excited to have you here to talk about it today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Well, let's just start with your personal experience with Clubfoot. So I know in the most respectful way possible, you're of a different generation. So kind of, I would say, maybe a pre-Ponseti generation, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm happy to be fully transparent about my age. I was born in 1948, so I'm 76 years old. And Clubfoot treatment at that time was very different than it is now. I got what was considered to be the standard of care for Clubfoot treatment. It was not Ponseti. Literally within a few days of my birth, I was in a cast. And then over the years, I was in casts and braces kind of intermittently. And what was done at the time was that the orthopedic surgeons, excuse me, they made a guess about how tall I would be. And that dictated the angle at which they would set the braces in the cast to try to get my foot into the right position. Okay?
Wow. I literally have never heard that before.
Well, that's what happened to me.
I believe you, but I'm just saying it's just...
Yeah.
Wow. It's crazy to wrap my head around it.
Yeah. So as an infant and as a toddler, three or four times a year, I was in a cast or a brace, an abduction brace or a cast, or later as I got older, a brace that would wrap around just below my knee and go down and hold an orthopedic shoe in the right position. Mm-hmm. And the theory was that if they guessed right about my height, they would put my foot at the right angle. Oh, they guessed wrong. So they thought I would be 5'11". I turned out to be 6'1". And through my youth, that really, I actually got a pretty good result.
Mm.
My foot bothered me. My foot was, needles and pins and sore, but I played sports. I did everything I wanted to do. But because my foot was actually in the wrong position, by the time I was 17, 18, I had to have an ankle fusion.
Mm.
Called a triple arthrodesis. And basically, it's an ankle fusion. And unfortunately, that ended my career in competitive sports, but I got a good result based on that operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, I played adult soccer. I ran marathons. I did triathlons. I did bicycle racing. And I lived, other than the constant sort of discomfort in my foot, a pretty normal life. As I got into my 60s and early 70s, my foot just wore out because of the biodynamic inequities. And my orthopedic surgeon told me that my foot had what he called, quote, bizarre architecture. So he at least had a sense of humor. So about 3 years ago, I ended up with a full ankle replacement, which was really... I'm glad I did it, I didn't get the ideal result that some people get because of the history of my foot. It really wasn't the surgeon's fault or the doctor's fault. So now I'm walking around, I'm going where I want to go, I'm traveling, working, all the rest. I will say that my foot is a source of constant discomfort. And what's gratifying is to see the prevalence of the Ponseti treatment and the care and attention that kids with clubfoot are getting so that they don't repeat my history. And I'm really happy about that. And, it's just, things happen in our lives and we really can't control them. And this is something that happened for me. So that's kind of the history. Like I said, it was difficult, but it really helped me to see kind of another side of life of people who are different, challenged, or ostracized, or treated in a way that's not fair because of some visible disability or visible characteristic that they have that they really can't control. So walk into my third or fourth grade classroom with a cast or a brace on, and the kids would tease and kids would poke fun. Nothing I can do about it. So anyway,
That's very interesting. I think that it's not just the physical discomfort of having something like clubfoot, right? So I think a lot of the time we know so many people who have been touched by clubfoot, but we don't know any of them individually because we don't actively talk about it. And now, especially with the Ponseti method, most of the treatment is done prior to them even being in school age. So unless, like, my daughter were to have some sort of relapse and then we would be having a surgery where we were dealing with something like that, really effectively, no one knows unless she talks about it. And I think especially because she's bilateral and in a way, so there's that consistency in both of her feet, both of her legs. There isn't a visible difference between that, where I think there's a difference with that with unilateral cases where there is more of that visible disparity between the two. So then you can see that. And I think a lot of the time people don't think about clubfoot in that way of something being a visible disability that makes you different. And so for you and having that different experience where it was visible as you were growing in your childhood, right?
Yeah. The other aspect of it that was kind of unfortunate at the time is that when I was a kindergartner or first grader or second grader, polio was still about in the United States.
Right.
There were many, many pictures of, unfortunate children in braces as a treatment for polio, as a result of polio. And a lot of kids and a lot of adults, because they saw my brace, thought I had polio. That became, stay away from him. He has polio. And it was just a level of ignorance that, even at the time was pretty remarkable. So, we talk about the social stigma that exists in other countries about clubfoot, and it exists here too, and all the rest. So, that was a difficult experience, but in a lot of ways, it was a good teacher in terms of me being able to at least sort of understand, what is it like to be different? Mm-hmm. What is it like to be othered? That's as an adult, that stood me in good stead. So I'm not glad it happened.
Yeah.
But as long as it happened, might as well make lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's something that I think about a lot too, is like, as a parent, do I want her to have clubfoot? No, I don't want that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that she hasn't learned, grown, become who she is because she had it. And if she didn't, she wouldn't be the same kid that she is today. And So at the same, on the same token, I don't really wish it away either, because I want, you know, she's such an incredibly resilient and flexible and amazing kid in a way. I have two older girls too that do not have clubfoot and are very typical health-wise. So I see that direct difference between the two, between them, right? I see someone who is who's had to struggle and build that resilience from birth, right? It's part of just who she is, versus my other girls who haven't. A question always becomes between my husband and I, like, how do we build resilience in kids that don't face adversity, right? And there's never been a question with her. She's faced adversity since birth. So I think it's such a interesting perspective that you, as a person with clubfoot, because that's also a distinction that I try to always make, that I don't have clubfoot, that's my daughter's story. My story is as her parent.
I think of my parents, and they were great people. I mean, mm-hmm. They were parents. They were mortals. They weren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
They went out of their way to get me the best care possible. They did everything they could. Unfortunately, some of the doctors at that time were monsters. Terrible bedside manner and that sort of thing. But they did try to do everything that they could.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt, you know, as a kid, that they were really trying to do the right thing as parents.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was good. That was good.
Yeah. So how did you start working or get involved with the Global Clubfoot Initiative?
Well, I had my ankle replacement surgery.
Okay.
It was extremely difficult. And I didn't have to stay in bed, but I was not walking around or doing anything for a good long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was laying in bed feeling sorry for myself and wallowing in self-pity. And I thought to myself, you know, I'd always been a political activist.
Mm-hmm.
And it just occurred to me, you know, like maybe I ought to do something with clubfoot.
Mm.
I'm not working right now. I'm not really traveling. I'm not going out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running around. And I started doing some research, mm-hmm. and I connected with Russell Owen at the Global Clubfoot Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a business coach and I'm an organizational development consultant. And I said, hey, the least I could do is donate some time to your organization. I'm a good coach. I'm a good organizational development consultant. I know that you folks at GCI are stretched to the limit with work and all the rest. And so we developed a relationship where I was doing some coaching and some, mm-hmm. I've gone over to London a couple of times and worked with the group. And it just became a lot of fun and a lot of really heartwarming stuff for me.
Mm.
And what I noticed was that, you know, Rosalind and her team were working so hard and so productive on not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some success in my life of going to organizations and going to corporations. And getting money.
Mm.
And when you look at the economics of clubfoot,
mm-hmm.
and you see the numbers of kids in low and in middle income countries that aren't being treated,
mm-hmm.
you look at the economics of the Ponseti treatment, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that with what is really not a lot of money, you could wipe clubfoot out year to year to year to year. So I started something called the Clubfoot Fund. It's a 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit US corporation.
Okay.
What that means is if somebody wanted to donate an individual wants to donate, they can go on that website and donate money. And if they do, that's great. And if they don't, that's fine too. I'm interested in getting organizations, corporations, foundations to put the kind of money towards clubfoot that year to year to year will wipe it out. That's about $80 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, $80 million, I don't have $80 million, and I'm betting maybe that you don't either.
I do not.
But the World Health Organization does, the Gates Foundation does, the Clinton Foundation does, many corporations do, And many, many corporations spend that much every year on paperclips.
Yeah.
So my pitch to them is, with the right amount of money, we can eliminate clubfoot in almost every case. Not every case. Some cases are very, as you know better than I, some cases are more difficult, require surgery, et cetera, et cetera. But for the most part, 96, 97, 98%, we can wipe it out. So that's the real purpose of the Clubfoot Fund, is to go to corporations, to go to foundations, and begin to raise this kind of money. The model is the same as Doctors Without Borders that do cleft palate.
Okay.
And that do vision stuff. I think what's appealing is that we don't need to do any research. We know how to fix this.
Right, right.
And it's one of the few problems you could throw money at and solve.
Yeah, right.
The other thing I want to do is, there is a social aspect to this, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that in many countries, the reason for recurrence of clubfoot is the inability or the unwillingness of parents to bring their child back a number of times to a clinic.
Yep.
That could be financial, that could be vocational,
mm-hmm.
that could be for lots of reasons. So for example, I could imagine a car company donating a vehicle to a particular clinic so that people who couldn't afford or who lived far away could be brought back and forth to the clinic so that the child could be treated. Car companies do that sort of thing all the time. It doesn't really cost them that much. So that's kind of where I've been in my business life,
mm-hmm.
of getting corporations to do good by doing good.
Yeah.
Do well by doing good, is I think is the right expression. Mm-hmm. And that's really the purpose of the Clubfoot Fund. So it's just started.
Okay.
We've started to raise, you know, honestly, small amounts of money so far.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to grow over time. And, you know, I'm investing a lot of my own energy and time in pursuing that sort of thing. So I'm happy about that. And anybody who's listening, you can go to clubfootfund.org and check it out.
Yep.
And, you know, the people at GCI have been very supportive. And I also want to say that, you know, my connection to GCI does not prevent me from working with other clubfoot organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the case may be. But Roslyn Owen has just been a wonderful partner.
Mm-hmm.
GCI or you know, they're a terrific group of people. And, you know, I'm very, very fortunate and very happy that they've accepted me as mm-hmm. You know, sort of a part of their team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that that is incredible. And I thank you for all of your work and dedication to try to bring this as much visibility as possible. I think that is one of the things about clubfoot and clubfoot treatment and the Ponseti method, is the beauty behind how simple and effective it is, right? Like we're talking about the majority of cases will never even need surgical intervention. So I've always felt like, and I think a part of it is Roz and the GCI and going like, this is low hanging fruit that we can effectively do something and impact change on a deformity that can turn into, if not treated, a lifelong disability.
Yeah.
But if we are able to treat it, it's not even considered a disability. So the fact that we have the knowledge, the know-how to get that done, and we need it relatively cost-effective, right? Like it's low cost. It's just
$500, you know. Yeah. Given the benefit that $500 generates in a particular individual's life is enormous. Unfortunately, in a lot of countries, that might as well be $5 million or $5 billion because people don't have those kind of resources. So this is not a dig at other health-related charities.
Yeah.
But we don't need research. We're not wondering how to fix this. Mm-mm. We're not saying give us money and maybe we'll figure out a cure. We're saying give us money. We know how to fix this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
99, 98, 97%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it should be a compelling case for organizations and corporations that want to have impact. They want to know, well, if we're going to generate money and put it towards this cause, what's the impact going to be? And we're going to say, well, for every dollar you spend, here's the impact. It's really, it's quite cut and dried.
Yeah, it's quite clear. Yeah. And I think back to the conversations that I had with surgeons who were pre-Ponseti and post-Ponseti, and they became Ponseti converts. And their talk about how the Ponseti method was one of the largest shifts in medical care, going from full surgery on kids' feet to effectively a small surgical procedure. And it shifted. It was such a huge shift in care. And Clubfoot, and this has that same capability to go, we have the potential to make this something that we used to go, oh, yeah, this used to, you know, be one of the leading causes of disabilities. And now, effectively, it's not like, and I think all of us parents out here who have kids who are now across the finish line, right? Just she'll always have Clubfoot, but the ability to watch my child be able to do whatever she wants to do is worth anything that we ever went through. And I think being able to give that to other families and push that forward is such an incredible thing that I think there's such a huge community of Clubfoot people that we just didn't, you know, tap into as much prior to. And now it's such a powerful movement. Like Clubfoot is just a movement in general, like the Ponseti method, the community, the parent community behind it, the parents pushing for Ponseti, making him come out of retirement, making the medical community go, oh, maybe we should listen to this guy who's been saying this for 40 years. Maybe he has something to say, because parents go, it shows the power of If I'm an advocate for my kid and I go, no, I want it this way, my voice then becomes something that is powerful and I'm able to utilize.
Well, you know, I give the surgeons credit who changed their minds on Ponseti treatment, because it was actually not in their economic interest to do so.
Right, right.
And I think I mentioned to you before, I attended World Clubfoot Day outside of London at the Chelsea football team's training facility. And there are about 300 kids there running around, playing soccer, football, I should say, in a soccer.
Yeah.
And, you know, a stranger dropped down onto that soccer field would never know that these kids had clubfoot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were just running around, having a good time and all the rest. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It was so nice to see. And the sense of community that was there was I think it was more impactful for the parents than it was for the children, because the children, you know, they're out there having a good time and eating snacks and drinking sodas and having a good time. And I think the parents, including myself, were very touched, you know, by seeing the results of this kind of effective treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really powerful. And I think that social aspect that you're talking about, that's a big piece of where I have seen a gap and wanting to fill, is just giving the support to parents so they feel empowered and confident in that treatment. Because so much of bracing and the Ponseti method lands on the parents at home. And that's one of the things that is different than a surgical, you know, surgery, and you recover and then you, you know, however long that recovery takes, and then you're kind of moving forward. But in this case, we're talking about a 5-year commitment to doing something for multiple hours a day. And it's a lot to ask And so my big push has always been, how do we then support parents to feel confident in that? And a big piece of that is giving them the light at the end of the tunnel, being like, it's everything that you feared upon the diagnosis of them not being able to, you know, live the life that they want to. It had nothing to even do with my expectations, but just making sure she didn't feel limited. That's what kept me motivated to keep going, right? And being able to showcase that in stories and people telling their experience has been a big why to everything that I've done in the community.
Yeah, you know, I think in addition to the technical side, I mean, I know that there's technical and medical expertise that's essential to the Ponseti treatment, but there's also the human connection side, where parents like yourself can connect with other parents and in effect be of service to the ones who are coming after you.
Yeah.
You had your 5-year experience. I would imagine if I were a parent in that situation, which thankfully I wasn't, it would have really been helpful to me to connect with you or other parents who'd been through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great thing about people getting together and, you know, trying to share what's common in their experience. I think it's as important as the technical side, you know, the medical application.
Yeah. And it's the great part about organizations like GCI who understand that piece of it too, and are able to bring those together. So it's also focused on the education and community aspect of it for the parents.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to just meet with us today, Bill. I've enjoyed our conversation and learning more, and I'll make sure that I put the globalclubfootfund.org in the show notes. So if anybody wants to spread the knowledge, then please do. And thanks again for being here.
Oh, Maureen, it's my pleasure. It's great to, after all this time, to finally talk to you and see you and meet you. And, you know, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. A huge thank you to Bill for being a guest on today's episode. If you found today's episode helpful, please share with anyone else you think would benefit from listening to it. If you want more information on the work the Clubfoot Fund is doing, please go to www.clubfootfund.org. And if you need to get in contact with me, you can do so through my website at maureenhoff.com or my Instagram account at Clubfoot Chronicles Mom. Until next time.